Today on Movie World, as we talk about fighting with your family and how to train your dragon, The Hidden World. Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yuzdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
Hello.
And by the way, that intro, How to Train Your Dragon is colon The Hidden World. I felt like it was a third movie title when I was saying it. I hope it didn't come across that way.
Oh.
It's How to Train Your Dragon 3. But they don't call it that. They call it How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World.
You know, they don't put numbers on anymore. I think it's to hide the fact that,
you know. It'll seem exhausting to people.
Correct.
Like, really now, a sixth one?
Yeah.
So they just go for...
Is that why?
The Avengers 374.
That makes total sense.
Next week's show.
It was just really weird. It tripped me up. I was like, what's the title of this movie? It's so long. Anyhow, so again, we're... As I keep complaining at the beginning of every podcast, we're trying to find our groove this year because the studios have... It's kind of a relief the Oscars are out of the way. We never really talked about the aftermath of Green Book being the best film of the year, but we... I don't know.
There's lots I feel to, like we shouldn't go down it. That rabbit hole
no,
today.
No, there's a lot to be said about it, but I mean, you know, I liked it, not best film, but... Anyway, it feels like it's nice to get that out of the way. And yes, I don't know if you have a comment about that, but we don't have to go there. But.
No, I agree with you. Not the best film of the year, but I will take my, you know, I'll take my happy wins where they did happen.
Yeah.
Olivia Colman.
Correct. Yeah. I agree.
But it's kind of nice to have that behind us because I feel like it's strange, but the last couple of years, it feels like... The movie season for the new year doesn't begin until the award shows are out of the way. And so having the Oscars behind us allows us to focus on the future again. It's so weird, isn't it?
Well, this is a great time of year for us, right? So it's the first week of March. It's spring. We've sprung forward now. And we always look forward to Tribeca, which is coming up in about a month and a half. Mm-hmm. So that's always a great time for Movie Wallers. It's one of the... film festivals that we love and
kind of
feel at home.
Year,
it's kind of a highlight of our year.
And South by Southwest
and South by Southwest just started and we've just had Sundance. And so I feel like we're really going to start getting into it now.
Remember not too long ago, the Oscars were in March.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. Well, I think that what they've done is they announced them earlier, right?
Yeah, so everything's moved out by 10 days
they
or
announced
so.
But they nominate earlier. And then the awards are later. So there's this really long limbo phase that we all kind of can't think about the new year because the old year isn't done and so on and so forth. So anyway, it's nice that we're past that. So a couple of movies to review today. But before we go there, we were going to do our I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Video on Demand or Netflix, as we used to say, but we talk about Amazon and everything these days. So... In our run-up to the award season, there were tons of stuff on streaming. What was in your queues, folks?
Go on.
So while we were talking about Oscars, one of the... You know, this was an hostless Oscar, and there was a lot of back and forth, whether it was good or not. So I took a lot of pleasure from some of the speeches, which were genuine and authentic. And one of the most authentic speech... was from the winner of the best live-action documentary, which is called Period, End of Sentence. And that particular documentary, which is only 25 minutes long, is now on...
It was in the shorts category, right?
It's in the shorts. Best short live-action documentary. That little 25-minute documentary is now on Netflix. You can watch it. It's absolutely...
Brilliant.
Wonderful. And I think there's the content, which itself is great. And it talks about the value of individual effort and the value of, you know, we can all kind of, you know, sink ourselves in despair and say, well, nothing changes in the world. Well, one person can do something and it can have very far-reaching effects. So from that perspective, it's great. But I even love how the whole thing has been constructed. It's only 25 minutes long and it plays like a jazz piece. You know, the music, and there's a little patang, and it goes to the next scene, and it's all constructed together with so much care. It's just not things slapped together. And not to put a, you know, I think there's been a trend in the last 2 or 3 years that the only documentaries which get, or only short subject or long documentaries which get nominated are the ones which deal with really serious, depressing subject matter. And that's important. We need to know about those things. But I think this one is so positive. It's just wonderful. It's about menstruation, of all things. And it's talking about how it's such a taboo in India, and how most women don't even have access, you know, to a sanitary pad. And by the way, on Netflix, there's a movie called Padman, which is based on a real man in India who started a revolution by deciding to hand make, you know, sanitary pads. And it sounds like an awkward subject matter, but it's done beautifully.
And is that, is it the same man?
It's the same man.
In there's both documentaries?
There's a documentary about the man, but then they made a movie with it, with actors, called Padman, which is playing in playing on Netflix. And then there is this particular documentary, period, end of a sentence, which has this man in it as well.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's just 25 minutes. You owe it to yourself.
And it feels, I mean, this is how good the documentary is, that it feels much more satisfying than its 25 minutes running time. It's beautifully constructed. And again, it's an awkward topic that most people don't talk about. But I think for me, it goes towards this whole revolution that seems to be happening about the power of women. And so not only is it about education, but it's about giving sanitary to women at that time of the month.
It's not so much about the power of women, rather, in my opinion, I think it was more about empowering women, because I think within these communities, these women, you know, felt that the whole menstruation topic was a shameful, dark, horrible thing. And by giving them a way to deal with the issue that was, you know, by bringing it out of the shadows, so to speak, even, you know, every woman in the world, half the world's population menstruates, right? It's kind of a bizarre thing. And yet it was this social taboo that made women feel, you know, closeted in some way and ostracized in others, and, you know, had economic impacts of all sorts. So it's very, you're right. Yes, it's 25 minutes and it's beautifully crafted. It's engaging from the first seconds of like the moment it kind of fades from black into color, you're immediately drawn into what it's telling us.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time last year in India, and one of the most high ranked, most watched issues by the media there has to do with this particular temple in northern India where women are not allowed to visit that temple when they're having a period. And there was this huge pushback against it, and certain women went in there, and it's like all a big deal in the media. And while that thing is brewing and it's becoming so tenacious and angry, it's good to see this little movie which is kind of fighting for the same issues, but doing it wonderfully. Not that the others are not as well, but it's great.
Great choice.
Well worth your time.
Yes. Moving on. Rashmi, what's
your
choice?
Mine is the complete opposite of that movie, Yasti, which is just such a world, you know, it can have such an impact on the world. My pick is Casino Royale from 2006, which was the kind of reboot of the Daniel Craig series of James Bond movies. And I don't like it just because there's a great scene of Daniel Craig coming out of the water with a perfect 12-pack. It's actually a good story. And I like the way that this James Bond got hurt and he felt more real. And all of the gadgets felt like they had a real place, as opposed to just dreamed out of nowhere. Kind of like a Chris Nolan movie.
I was going to say it, but I figured
I could
you would
see it on your
down.
Face. I could see it on Joe's face. Just an all-round fun movie. And I think, Joe, you and I watched this again fairly recently it felt, but it really held up numerous times.
It's probably my favorite Bond, and I don't say that lightly. I mean, I'm not like a Bond fanatic. I've always enjoyed James Bond movies, but when this one came along, it was a point when, you know, I think we're just in the post-Pierce Brosnan era.
Correct.
The character has started to become a little bit of a joke again, kind of the Roger Moore cliche, you know.
Timothy Dalton, then we had, Pierce Brosnan.
I thought Dalton was a good Bond, but the Brosnan was too Roger Moore, too smooth, too many wisecracks, and this...
Although those had their place as well.
Correct.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, you know, The Spy Who Loved Me, Octopussy,
Man with the Golden Gun,
Moonraker. Yeah. All, as ridiculous as they are, they're great fun. But I felt like the series, you know, was losing some of its steam, and we weren't interested. And then we saw Casino Royale, and it just brought this...
A badass agent back to life.
It's the first time you see Bond really bleed, and Bond...
Correct.
Kind of broken down, which is very much against the whole persona of Bond.
And Ava Green, I thought, was such a kick-ass heroine in this... Heroine, I don't know if you want to call her a heroine. Partner for James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
But
even plot-wise, I mean, I think it had a lot more depth than many Bond movies of recent.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a remake, right? There was an original Casino Royale.
It was...
One of the early movies, or maybe it was a book that was early on in the series. But anyway, superb reboot, and you know, it was kind of cemented in my mind Daniel Craig as one of the better Bonds of the list that we've had. I mean, I think he was to my mind the best Bond since Sean Connery. So, excellent pick. I will watch that movie over and over again happily.
Joe, what's on your list?
My pick is a movie that I hope I haven't spoken about this before, but it's a movie that we somehow missed. So in the early 2000s, when we had a lot of these movies coming over from China, there was this big kind of, almost operatic Chinese movies, martial arts done with wires, and this kind of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. We had... House of Flying Daggers.
Flying Daggers.
A movie that came before all of them and really brought this style of Chinese filmmaking to the forefront is a movie called Hero, starring Jet Li, and directed by Yimou Zhang, who I think directed a bunch of the other the movies as well. So this is a movie that we'd missed, and every time I read, you know, a list of top 50 movies of the last 10 years, it keeps coming up. So I said to Rashmi, we owe it to ourselves to kind of watch this one. And it's available on Netflix right now. And it is a masterpiece of a movie. I mean, it's visually very, very arresting. I mean, it's a style that either you love or hate. And I think, you know, I had a little time adjusting to its visual style when I first saw it in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, this kind of all done with wires that were deleted out. So they have this very anti-gravity type movement to the martial arts. But the story in this one, I thought, was it's a parable. It's a parable about power. It's a parable about all sorts of issues. But it was done so wonderfully well. It's essentially two guys in a room and a series of backflashes, and it was very engaging, and it took me a couple of days to process all of it, to really kind of, you know, for the movie's deeper meaning, I think, to penetrate my superficial brain. But it's so short. It runs for like an hour and 20 minutes, but it feels so much more heavy than that in terms of its impact. So I loved this movie. Rashmi, I don't think you've seen it yet. It's totally worth a
plane
ride.
It's eye candy. It's just pure eye candy. You lick it up.
Yeah. So again, our three movies are Period, End of Sentence, Casino Royale, and Hero. Tons of stuff on streaming. Go watch if you're not watching stuff at the movies, such as the two movies that we're about to tell you about. So we have two movies today. We have How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, and Fighting With My Family. Where would you like to start, guys?
Why don't we do How to Train Your Dragon?
Okay,
so when Hiccup discovers Toothless isn't the only Night Fury, he must seek the Hidden World, a secret dragon utopia, before a hired tyrant named Grimmel finds it first. So this is directed by Dean DeBlois, And it's written by him and Cressida Cowell, and he's actually based on the series of books called How to Train Your Dragon. And main voices by Jay Baruchel and America Ferrera, and then a whole host of other great voice talent.
Cate Blanchett,
Gerard Butler, Craig Ferguson, Jonah Hill, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Kristen Wiig, Kit Harington, many, many, many others. It's a huge cast. So, was this world worth finding? Yazdi, why don't you kick us off?
I think the movie reflects more than anything else what kind of technological advances have been made since the original How to Train Your Dragon came out. And mind you, How to Train Your Dragon is one of my favorite animated movies, not because of the visuals necessary, but because it has such a nice heart and such a good message, that being to consider a long perceived enemy with some degree of compassion, which I think we could all use a little bit of right now. And it also has this beautiful sense of man and creature learning to be with each other. If you have any kind of a pet, it's an absolute must. So I think since that movie came out, there's been one other movie where, you know, Hiccup finds out about his mom, voiced by Cate Blanchett. And now this is the third one in this particular series. And it seems the way this movie ends that maybe they're wrapping things up. I don't know if they are. But there is 10 times as many dragons. There is 100 times as many aerial shots. I mean, I got dizzy in the first 5 minutes just from the number of dragons on the screen, each different, each having a different motion, different. So it's visually exhausting, and it's meant to be visually exhausting. And I was amazed that we have reached that point with our abilities that we can populate large screen with these wonderful creatures. So it was a joy to watch. Story-wise, it's not a step back, but it's not a step forward either.
Joe?
Kind of like the Kung Fu Panda series, I think the first movie was just a milestone in terms of storytelling. I think, yes, you summarized it very nicely, but the magic of the original How to Train Your Dragon for me was the interaction between the dragon and again, if you've as people who own pets, it's spot on, and it in many ways encapsulates the kind of relationship that you have with your animal. So agree 100%. And I was very, very disappointed with How to Train Your Dragon 2, because it leaves that kind of stuff behind. Mm-hmm. And this one brought some of it back. Yes. in many ways. I think the central relationship for me in this movie was between Hiccup and the dragon. It was less about this big world in which they're in. And there's stuff, and there's bad guys, and, you know, there's mania. So I found a lot of the other stuff a little less engaging, but it did feel to me like a return to form. Like, if this had been the second movie, I would have been so much happier in terms of what I got. So I like this a lot more than the second movie, which I think is kind of disposable. It doesn't stand up to the marvel that is the first one, but again, that first movie was very special. So it's fun, it's somewhat satisfying, and like you, Yazdi, I felt that it was very much the end. Mm-hmm. It was a door closing. This series is done. I don't think there's much more for them to do with it. So, you know, kind of like I felt about Toy Story 3. So, but then there's a Toy Story 4. So who knows what they'll do with dollars as an incentive. But good stuff.
One can only hope. That should tell you how I feel about the movie. So look, hands down, I think this is some of the best animation and the cinematography I've seen in any movie. Those scenes when we're gliding over the ocean and going through the forest are just breathtaking. But I just feel like the movie just wasn't a requirement. And I feel a bit humbug given that it's riding pretty high on Rotten Tomatoes. But I really feel like this was a story that could have been told in 15 minutes.
I agree.
And I think we could say that about a lot of movies, but this felt so light on story that it was almost so unsatisfying for me. And I could so have done without that whole romance stuff. It just felt like...
Hiccup romance or dragon romance?
Both. Okay. The dragon romance upset me even more than the hiccup romance.
It's kind of just like National Geographic, right?
It was just crazy. I felt like the whole thing, including Dragon Utopia, was just like an acid trip. I kind of couldn't wait for this to be over. I really didn't enjoy this one.
I mean, the dragon romance that I guess occurs is obviously it's a reason for Hiccup and Toothless to part ways, right?
Correct.
They're growing up, they're moving in their own directions, each wants to have kind of their own life and family. So, you know, but it was kind of bizarre in the sense of it was very much, you know, like one of those documentaries that you see where two birds kind of, you know, dance around each other. It's, you know, showing feathers. Yes. And
it was just weird.
I also thought it was really nicely done in the sense of, you know, dragons don't speak in this movie, in this world, in this universe. So we got to see how they are as animals, kind of thing, right? Anyway, I thought it was kind of fun, but there were very long sections. I mean, it felt like there were very long silent sections where...
Well, I think they were trying to reproduce...
Wall-E,
definitely. But I even sent some of the first movie. You know, the first movie, there was a lot of just Hiccup and the dragon getting to know each other, sniffing around each other, figuring out their space around each other. And whereas there, it was just... all charm and beautiful execution. Yeah, it kind of felt a little tired because we had been there before. Also, I don't know. It didn't fill up my heart like the first one did. Maybe the fault is because we've seen all of this before.
Yeah.
But again, it felt like filler to me. That, like, there's no other story to go to, and so let's just put a 20-minute mating scene in here. So it just felt really disingenuous to the rest of the story because
the rest
of the story is supposed to be about this you know, person who wants to sort of kill out all of the Night Furies. But we never got the motivation even of why he wanted that or what the purpose was. And so it all just felt very mechanical and just not required.
As a kids' movie, though, I think it works. I think there's plenty of stuff visually going on that I think, you know, I always worry when, you know, the Pixar movies to me don't feel like they're very good kids' movies. I think this universe here, especially with the endless supply of interesting dragons, are going to be a lot of fun for the kids to watch. But, so should we score this
Let's
one and
score
move
this
on?
One,
okay,
because yeah.
I see Rashmi losing her patience here. So, sure. I mean, for me, it was a satisfying end, but I was also really glad to see it end. I think this franchise should not have been one. Had it ended with movie number one, we would have had an all-time classic to look upon. I think the sequels, driven by commercial, whatever, you know, it just felt to me like their reason for existing was they had built a following and not necessarily that they had these wonderful stories that had to be told. So I'm going to give it a very generous 7 out of 10. I think it was okay. I'm glad that it's done. And it's not a bad use of your time, just, you know, not one to run out and see. It's not, again, if the first one didn't exist, this would be okay. But if the first one didn't exist, then I would have not had any interest in this at all.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they should have waited a few more years and kind of really seen these characters through. I think outside of the relationship between Hiccup and Toothless, the other relationship that I've always admired in this series is the one between Hiccup and Astrid.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I really like the Astrid character because she has a lot of agency. She's self-motivated. She doesn't need Hiccup. She's often helping Hiccup. And it's voiced by America Ferrera, and there's just so much gumption and
sass
and that. And that kind of stuff can come off seeming very artificial if it's not done right. And it's always done right. So I really enjoyed, you know, having Astrid back on the scene. It's, like I said, visually just amazement. I think it'll fill kids' eyes with spectacle and wonder, but can do better. You know, like my report card used to say every year, can do better. 6 out of 10.
Bah humbug, we need to train this dragon to rest now. 4 out of 10.
Oh. Slain by Rashmi. Slain,
yeah. No fire.
Okay, well, yeah, I hope it's done. Let's move on then to a movie called Fighting With My Family. So, Yazdi, can you tell us about Fighting With My Family?
Yes, so British writer and director Stephen Merchant, who's done a lot of work writing some pretty important movies and has been involved mostly with directing a lot of television shows, takes on his first big major motion picture direction with Fighting With My Family. And the movie has a very impressive cast. It has Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It has Lena Headey, the suddenly everywhere Florence Pugh, Jack Loudon, Julia Davis. Stephen Merchant himself is in it. Vince Vaughn is in this. So it's got a pretty good cast. And I couldn't get a chance to see the movie, but the summary of the movie says that a former wrestler and his family make a living performing at small venues around the country while his kids dream of joining WWE or World Wrestling Entertainment. So it seems like the kind of scrappy, you know, family prevailing against all odds kind of movie, which is definitely down, you know, my lane. So what do you guys think about this? Is this real goodness sugar, or is it an artificial sweetener?
So in a very Billy Elliot kind of way, this is a highly enjoyable movie with very, very British sensibilities. I think the dialogue is very colloquial English, and so I'm a little worried that it won't land as well in the US. But despite that, I couldn't help but love this movie. I oscillated between smiling and tearing in equal quantities.
You know, we had a little bit of a primer for this movie with the Netflix series Glow. And the world of women's wrestling. I didn't even remember growing up that women wrestled. I always remembered the male, you know, the Hulk Hogan's, and in England we had the Big Daddies. But I never remember female wrestling. So, you know, Glow came along, the Netflix series with, what's her name?
Alison Brie.
Alison Brie. And it introduced me to this idea that there were these big women wrestlers. And this movie takes us...
Well, women wrestlers who are big in entertainment, not big women wrestlers.
Both.
Okay.
So this kind of brings us into that universe, and I was already comfortable with this notion. And look, I mean, some are going to criticize this movie for being, you know, a little too pat. You know, it's got this very, you know, family story. There's Fighting With My Family. So she has a dream of being a wrestler. It doesn't go down well, particularly with a competitive sibling in her family, and you know it's in part the journey of the two of them, her prevailing against, you know, difficult circumstances by moving to the United States as a wrestler. But look, it's really good fun. It's very funny. Rashmi, I agree. The humour does have a definite British strain to it. This was another one of those movies where, you know, having grown up in the UK, both you and I were laughing at moments that I think other audience members
Correct.
Were struggling
Correct.
With. And that's not to sound, you know, snobbish or elitist in any way, but there's just certain pop culture references that had... you know, very specific meaning to us that I think, you know, the movie relies upon in some part for its gags. But with that said, I think everyone did have a good time with this. I saw lots of smiles coming out. You know, the movie tells its story very well. There's a very likable family infrastructure around the main character. Vince Vaughn was my favorite in this movie.
Because, he was great, yeah.
He plays this very almost dangerous, dangerously powerful entity within the movie's universe. And he strikes that knife edge of Vince Vaughn, we know, as a likable, funny guy. But seeing him as this very strict disciplinarian within the movie's universe is a little off-putting. But I thought he was brilliant in this. So, yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was good. It was really, really good fun.
I think one of the things that really impressed me was, you know, it's a great premise, right? But we've seen this kind of Rocky-esque type story, you know, where someone...
The sports movie.
Yeah, the sports movie. Yeah, thanks, Joe. And it has such a rich palette of things to explore. And the nice thing about this movie is it manages to stay somewhat light and frothy, but it's got so much heart, which stops it being too disposable. So I was worried when I saw that it was Stephen Merchant, because he is a comedian and he's a really good comedian and he writes really funny comedy. And so I was worried that it would be almost light and disposable, but it just has this really nice anchor of being about struggle and about a family's, the value of family in a way, that just anchors it so well that you never, it never lets you breathe in a way. And it's a 2-hour movie and I never once thought, oh my God, you know, where are we in the movie? It kind of has that all is lost moment quite a few times, I thought. When I thought we're at rock bottom and then it goes again and then it goes again.
Yeah.
And so, and it's done so, I mean, and I didn't know much about this particular story about this, fighter. It's actually based on a true story. And it was actually, there's actually a documentary, that sort of, started this whole effort off by The Rock. The Rock was actually very interested in this family and had been connected with this family and then approached Stephen Merchant to do the movie. It's a great premise. It just seems to work. The only thing, if I had any criticism about the movie, would be that I hate the title. Fighting with My Family is just not a title that grabs me that well. So other than that, though, I think this has got great acting as well. I think Nick Frost is so good as the dad. And Joe said it, even though we didn't talk about the movie coming out of the movie, Joe was saying, I was really hoping that we would get to see real footage of the family as the titles run. And you do. And I was shocked at how well they had captured the essence of the family.
And I take it then this is not a Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie at all. He's just a cameo.
He's in it. He's in it in part because I believe he had a role in the real...
Correct.
Yeah, probably executive producer correct. Or something, yeah. Yeah.
No, but he actually had a role as a fight...
In real life.
Yeah, when he was wrestling.
The movie is set at the time when he was, you know, on top of the world as a kind of famous wrestling star.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, again, if you want to poke holes in this kind of stuff, you can. It has that very, warm feeling to it, which again I think some people will find a little bit off-putting. And the only other thing to say here is, you know, Steve Merchant has a very particular voice and it's very clearly his screenplay. There are many of the jokes that are made in the movie which feel like they were the kind of things that he would have said as a character in one of the movies that he's played, you know. So he has that very specific sensibility, self-deprecating in some ways. But that's not to knock the movie too much for that. It's just, it very much feels like, you know, his voice throughout. And look, you know, he put this stamp on it. He wrote and directed it.
Yeah, and Jack Loudon, who actually plays Zach, the main protagonist's brother, I was so impressed with him. And I looked him up. He was in 71 and he was also in... the latest in Dunkirk.
Hmm.
So you'll recognize him. He's a great actor. Really good actor.
Okay.
That's hard to do, I think.
So definitely one to...
Yeah, well, warm your cockles.
Okay.
As we say in England.
Should one's cockles need warming.
Correct. Yes. Correct. And I'll leave my summing up there. Easily 8 out of 10.
I'm going to give this an 8 too. It was just... It's very, very good fun and it's very funny in places. So, absolutely recommended there for anyone. Okay, so let's wrap up our podcast for today. Thank you very much for sticking with us. Hope you enjoyed this. You can find us at facebook.com/moviewallahs, twitter.com/moviewallahs, instagram.com/moviewallahs, where... We were delinquent in posting a picture of our new movie Wallah's dog, Sawyer. So I will do that today so that you can meet dear little Sawyer, who's here with us today as we record from Yazdi's house.
Somewhere
we're all looking around and she's very quiet.
She's hopefully not getting up to any mischief, but she's a little sweetheart. So until our next
bed upstairs, yes.
Okay. So until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.